Welcome to The Wildlife, a program that probes the mysteries of the animal world through interviews with scientists and other wildlife investigators. I'm Laurel Nemi, your host for The Wildlife, and also author of Animal Investigators, How the World's First Wildlife Forensic Lab is Solving Crimes and Saving Endangered Species. Today on The Wildlife, I'll be joined by Jill Robinson, founder of Animals Asia Foundation and China Bear Rescue. We'll talk about Asiatic black bears, also known as moon bears, and the tragedy of farming them for their bile in China, Vietnam, Korea, and elsewhere. As a warning, because of the horrific conditions on many of these bear farms, some of what you'll hear in today's episode is graphic and disturbing. However, our conversation will also focus on the rescue of these bears and what is being done to save them. But first, let me play you today's creature call. This week's creature call is a sound from an ungulate that lives in the western United States. Now listen carefully and see if you can guess today's creature call. At the end of the show, I'll play these sounds again, tell you what kind of animal made them, and also give you a preview of next week's creature call. Now, let me turn to my conversation about bear farming in China with Jill Robinson, founder of Animals Asia Foundation and China Bear Rescue. For thousands of years, the bile in bears' gallbladders has been used in traditional Asian medicine to treat a range of serious liver ailments, fevers, and other complaints. In fact, it's so effective that modern Western medicine also uses a chemically synthesized form of the major bear bile acid to dissolve gallstones and treat cancers, liver cirrhosis, and other diseases. The preferred source of bile has always been the Asiatic black bear, which is also called the moon bear, a name it gets from the cream-colored crescent-shaped blaze on its chest. Asiatic black bears look similar in appearance to North American black bears, except that their fur is longer, softer, and shaggier, and they weigh a bit less. High demand for their gallbladders has decimated their populations. In what they claimed was an effort to stop poaching of Asian black bears, China, Vietnam, and North and South Korea began milking bears for their bile for use in their traditional medicine in the early 1980s. The issues surrounding bear farms are twofold. First is whether the reduced prices and wider availability of bear bile due to these farms expands the overall market. And second, that the squalid conditions and unsafe medical practices are inhumane. Today's guest, Jill Robinson, has been working to eliminate bear farms for over 17 years. Born in the United Kingdom, Jill Robinson arrived in Hong Kong in 1985 and spent the next 12 years working in Asia as a consultant for the International Fund for Animal Welfare. In 1993, a chance visit to a bear farm in southern China changed Jill's life. Starting with this visit, she's worked tirelessly to expose the plight of endangered Asiatic black bears cruelly farmed and milked for their bile, and learned how easily herbs and synthetics could replace bear bile. In 1995, she secured the release of the original bear she had discovered in 1993. Then, in 1998, she founded Animals Asia, and in July 2000, she and the Animals Asia team signed a breakthrough agreement with the Chinese authorities to rescue 500 farm bears and work toward promoting herbal alternatives to bile and the elimination of bear farming. Today, the Moon Bear Rescue has seen the rescue of 260 bears in China and the opening of a new rescue center for 200 farm bears in Vietnam. To date, 30 bears have been rescued there in Vietnam. Animals Asia Moon Bear Rescue Sanctuaries are spearheading far-reaching community, education, and welfare programs, which benefit both animals and people alike. Jill herself is a former member of the Hong Kong government's Animal Welfare Advisory Group and honorary advisor to the Ocean Park Conservation Foundation in Hong Kong. She's received numerous awards in recognition of her services to animal welfare in Asia, including the Reader's Digest Hero for Today Award, an MBE by Queen Elizabeth in the Birthday Honors List, the USA Genesis Award, which is the only major media and arts award concerning animal issues, and others. In 2008, she was named Outstanding Earth Champion in Hong Kong and was appointed World Animal Day Ambassador for Asia. Jill has given hundreds of presentations throughout the world and has been interviewed by CNN, BBC News, and National Public Radio, among many others. The China Bear Rescue was the subject of the award-winning British Really Wild Show special, which screened in January 2003, and Animals Asia's own in-house film, called China Bear Rescue: The Beginning, has won countless awards worldwide. Most recently, Jill was featured in Animal Planet's one-hour special Moon Bears, Journey to Freedom, which was narrated by Stephen Fry. When she spoke to me recently from the China Bear Rescue Center in Chengdu, China, I asked Jill what first set her on this path to rescue moon bears.
Without a shadow of a doubt, seeing one for the first time, but not under any positive circumstances, I'm very sad to say, but on one of these notorious bear farms in southern China, where I first saw 32 bears incarcerated in tiny wire cages in the dungeon of a bear farm and in 1993. And from that day, have absolutely never looked back. And my love and my respect of this amazing, endangered, and very forgiving species just grows and grows each year.
Tell me about that experience, and why were you on this farm in the first place?
It was way, way back, again in 1993, and I was working then as the Asia consultant for the International Fund for Animal Welfare. And I received a call from a journalist friend who had just come back from a bear farm in southern China, and he just said, "Jill, you have to go and see it."
As I said earlier, China, Vietnam, and North and South Korea all established bear farms in the early 1980s as a way to extract bile from live bears, which could then be used in traditional medicine. As of the early 2000s, Asian farms held over 11,000 bears, with 7,000 in China, 1,800 in South Korea, and 2,400 in Vietnam.
So tell me more about this first bear farm that you saw.
I joined a tour group, Japanese and Taiwanese tourists, and we were only shown sort of the outside breeding area where the bears were in like a pit type environment. And people could put apples on the end of washing lines or, you know, fishing lines and just hang it down and tease the bears. And that in itself I found very, very distasteful, obviously. And then we were all shown into a shop full of Chinese medicine products containing bear bile. And I'd remembered my friend had said there was this basement. So I broke away from the group when they were absorbed in buying bear bile and went downstairs into this horrible dark room and saw these bears. And it was quite dark. And I heard these sort of strange popping vocalizations. And as I got closer to the cages, they became louder and more frantic. It suddenly occurred to me that my very first introduction to this species of moon bears was the introduction of their fear, because obviously my presence was signaling something horrible was going to happen to them. And these nervous vocalizations became louder and more frantic, as I said, and it was, you know, horrible to imagine that they thought I was going to do them harm.
Then what happened?
And then at one point, I backed into a cage too closely and I felt something brush my shoulder. And as I turned around, a female moon bear had her paw through the bars of the cage. And I did something which in retrospect was very, very silly. I took it. And now, you know, so many years later working with these animals, you'd never, never take an unpredictable wild species by the paws like this. They would just rip your arm off your shoulders. But she didn't. She just squeezed my fingers very rhythmically, and we looked into each other's eyes, and it was a moment I will never, never forget. And I had the instinct then that I would never, never see her again, and I never did. But as sure as anything in my life, a message passed between us, and that started a change, and it started the dream of the China Bear Rescue, and that's where we are today.
You are actually talking to me from the China Bear Rescue site in Chengdu, is that correct?
I am. It's a place where now we've rescued 276 bears, and we have, goodness, about 14 enclosures on a 25-acre site, and it really is one of those dreams come true, and I mean a place of peace, which is food for the soul. There's no doubt about it.
So tell me more about the bears. When I think of you holding this bear paw, I mean, the claws are extremely long. So can you describe what is a moon bear?
They are Absolutely, one of the most beautiful species in the world. As I said to you before, Laurel, they are endangered as well, and they're called a moon bear because of that lovely crescent moon on their chest, which ranges from, you know, a dull cream to a stunning orange sometimes, but generally it's a lovely lemony yellow, just like the moon. They are anything from 55 kilos to maybe anything up to about 250 kilos if they're a big chunky boy. They are, as you say, incredibly strong with lovely long claws and teeth the same as ours, you know, flat back molars and but actually very long canines.
Now, do those canines get in the way when they're on the farms?
In fact, the claws and the canines are cut back on these farms very often deliberately. The teeth are cut back to gum level, exposing the pulp and the nerves. The claws are chopped away, the paw tips are chopped away to stop the claws from ever growing again. And this is all done to take away their defenses, so they're less dangerous to milk.
Can you describe how the bears are milked?
They have latex catheters inserted into their abdomens so that bile can be drained, or indeed it could be metal catheters, or the new method is simply a hole or a fistula that's gouged into their abdomen and into their gallbladder so that bile can freely drip out.
And then what is the bile used for?
It is all used in traditional Chinese medicine in a product that I hasten to say can be easily and cheaply synthesized and replicated by herbs and in a laboratory from slaughterhouse byproducts.
I wanted to back up and talk about what they're used for in the traditional Chinese medicine or traditional Asian medicine, because it's not just in China. It's bear bile is used in a lot of countries. Is that right?
Well, it is, but it's used illegally in a lot of countries, Laurel. In China and in all countries where bears exist and where they're farmed, it has to be deemed as a domestic trade. It is illegal under the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, CITES, to be exporting bear bile anywhere in the world.
Just to clarify, under the Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species, also known as CITES, all Asian bear species, including the Asiatic black bear or moon bear, the brown bear, sun bear, sloth bear, and giant panda are all included in Appendix 1, which prohibits commercial trade in the animals and their parts. However, commercial trade of bear parts that stays within a country's borders is governed by that country's domestic law. In the United States, the law related to bear parts can vary depending on the species involved and the state you live in. However, importing bile from CITES Appendix 1 protected moon bears milked at an Asian farm and importing that into the United States is illegal. In China, however, selling bear bile from farm bears and keeping it within China is legal. So Jill, tell me, what happens? Do these laws stop the international trade?
Of course, it's getting out. And right there in the USA, you know, if you go into Chinatowns with Chinese medicine shops that are less than reputable, you will find it for sale.
What have you been doing to stop that?
We're working with a lot of amazing Chinese medicine doctors here and in the United States, with the American College of Traditional Chinese Medicine, for example, who abhor this practice, abhor the use of bear bile or any other endangered species in traditional medicine products, and are working very, very hard with us to bring bear farming to an end.
And then are the bears on the farm, are they caught from the wild?
Many of them are. About 30% of the bears that we have on site are missing limbs from being caught in leg hole traps or snares in the wild. Certainly in Vietnam, there's less than 100 bears left in the wild, and this is largely due to the incessant demand for their body parts and their bile.
There are less than 100 bears in the wild in Vietnam.
Absolutely. There's about 16,000 to 19,000 here in China. So they are, again, they're Appendix 1 endangered species. So this is not just a critical animal welfare issue. It's also a conservation issue too, which is, you know, threatening their habitat. It's threatening their lives in the wild. And it's a great concern to biologists and conservationists internationally.
In the wild, where can you find moon bears?
Just virtually across the whole of the Asia continent. continents, India, Pakistan, right up into the Russian Far East, in South and North Korea, for example. So, yeah, ironically as well, in Vietnam and China and South Korea, where bear farms very readily exist.
And then in the wild, are they solitary or do they live in groups?
No, they are considered a solitary species, which is one of the challenges that we have, obviously, in managing such a large number of the bears.
Just as a reminder to listeners, the Moon Bear Rescue Center in Chengdu, China, is a sanctuary for moon bears rescued from bear farms. The facility is the first of its kind in the world, and it combines a safe, semi-natural environment for the bears in rehabilitation areas and bamboo forest enclosures. And it also allows up-close visitor access in specially created zones where visitors can watch the bears at play and rediscovering their natural behaviors. So tell me more about the management of these bears, especially if they're a solitary species.
Out of the 276 animals that we have here, we've got 180 that are alive today, as I say, in enclosures on a site here in Chengdu, in southwest China. And so the management of these animals is again very, very challenging, to try to keep them in social groups in a, an environment that they would not, potentially enjoy in the wild. But having said that, hats off to our bear managers here. They are doing an amazing job, and they are keeping them very happily and very healthily in these groups.
I should mention here that if someone wants to see these bears in action on the at the rescue site, you can go to YouTube, and Animals Asia has a number of videos up there. So just search for Animals Asia Foundation. So tell me about the threats to moon bears. Is it mostly for use of their parts, their bile?
Yes, absolutely it is. Although, certainly they are also used in the entertainment industry. We've just, seen a terrible survey of safari parks here in China, and also a circus in Vietnam, where they are trained by negative reinforcement. They are whipped and they are beaten and they are declawed and detoothed again, and used in these awful entertainment shows, skipping with skipping ropes, being able forced to juggle flaming logs that are set alight between their feet. They're made to balance on high wires, believe it or not. We've got seen one show where they're 10 meters high riding a motorbike on a wire, and they're absolutely petrified, as you can imagine. Sometimes they're dressed up in skirts and dresses. They're made to box with each other or with trainers as well. I mean, they're just completely reduced to a shell of the animal that they would be in the wild.
Does your rescue deal with bears from the entertainment industry as well, or does it concentrate on the bear farms?
Laurel, I wish we could deal with them all. I really do. I love this species, and they are so intelligent, and they're so forgiving. They deserve so much more, than being beaten into submission in the shows. But we have to concentrate on bear farming.
So tell listeners how many bears are in these farms.
In China, there are 7,000 bears minimum, possibly more than 10,000. And in Vietnam, 4,000 bears that are being farmed in tiny wire cages under the most obscene conditions for decades, for their whole life until they die.
And then tell me about what you've done to help the moon bears. I know you established the Animals Asia Foundation. If you could tell listeners a little bit about that foundation and what it does.
Okay, well, we're a registered charity in several countries across the world, including USA, and our USA office is headed up by lovely Alice Ng and Morgan as well, the two of those girls, plus some other employees, of course, along the way, has been set up to engage in public education programs, in publicity and awareness, and, to help us in the core programs here in China and Vietnam to establish the means to ending bear farming Asia-wide. So we're working on a lot of research programs to show the community, not only in China and Vietnam, but across the world, that bear farming not only is killing these bears in huge numbers, but the contaminated bile is potentially harmful to human health. And that's another, obviously, big indicator of this industry, that it's not sustainable and it's not humane.
So tell me a little bit more about the bear farming industry. You said there were 7,000 to 10,000 bears on being farmed in China.
Yes. It's just incredible. I mean, these are animals, as I say, that are spending 10, 20, even 30 years of their lives housed in these cages, to the extent that they will grow into the bars of the cage. They suffer from often something called stress dwarfism, where they have a normal bear-sized head and a dwarf-sized body because of growing into the cage. They are very often blind because they have bad nutritional problems as a result of being fed literally rubbish on the farms. They hardly ever have free access to food and water. And again, you know, as I say, that the most hideous problem is the fact that their bodies are degraded surgically by butchers in these countries that are creating these fistulas or holes to drain their body fluid directly from their bodies. It just sounds like a horror. You know, what the National Enquirer once did a story on this, and I think, you know, people in America thought that this story couldn't possibly be true. But, you know, we're here to tell you that it's a living nightmare for these bears, and we need help to end it.
So tell me about the China Bear Rescue. Is the government involved in helping to close these bear farms?
Yeah, absolutely. Animals Asia has been working on this project now. I mean, obviously, ever since I walked onto a bear farm in 93, but I founded Animals Asia in 1998. And then in 2000, we signed a historical agreement with the Chinese government to rescue 500 bears. And we couldn't be doing this rescue without them. They have been, you know, in most parts, incredibly supportive with what we're doing. But, you know, having said that, it's still a challenge to work with any government in any country, and especially, obviously, in a communist country such as China and Vietnam. So we do have our problems. But, you know, just this last few days, we actually were in Shandong province rescuing another 10 bears and bringing them back in a four-day journey by road, by day, by night, sleeping on the coach, and getting these bears safely home. Now, these were marked our 276 bears to be rescued. They had what we call full metal jackets around their bodies. These are contraptions, medieval gadgets, vests, if you like, or corsets, weighing 10 kilograms in weight, which hold a latex catheter in place and prevent the bears from pulling them out. A few hours before we arrived on this bear farm, the farmer, because this method is against regulations, had literally pulled the jackets off of the bears' bodies and pulled the catheters out of the gallbladder and the abdomen, literally ripped them out, tore them out of the bears' bodies, so that when we arrived, these animals were bleeding, they were leaking bile and pus, they were in a horrible, horrible condition. One of them was so sick, we thought we were going to lose him, and we actually operated on Oliver on the road as we were leaving the bear farm, and with the help of the local hospital.
Really? And what happened with Oliver?
Well, he's now, I'm looking at the hospital from where I'm sitting in my room, and he's in the hospital room recovering now from that surgery and doing really, really well. Oliver was in his crush cage by the farmer's own admission for 30 years of his life. And then he almost ended his life by that same farmer ripping out the catheter from his gallbladder and abdomen and literally dying in front of our eyes. It was a horrible, horrible experience. But we got the gallbladder out, our fantastic vet, Heather and her team, Monica, and all of our bear team there. We, apart from the gallbladder, when we cut into that organ, we found this circular metal disc that had been holding the latex catheter in place. It was about the size of a golf ball, I guess, and but flat, and it had held the catheter in place, and it was absolutely obscene, and I can't even imagine the sort of pain that it was causing Oliver. You know, as soon as that gallbladder and disc was out of his body, even under anesthetic, his heart rate and respiration rate reduced. So already under anesthetic, he was feeling a happier bear.
Wow. You had mentioned that that method was against regulation. What are the regulations?
Well, they're sketchy, Laurel. There is no law in China. There is a law in Vietnam now preventing bear farming. It is against the law, even though 4,000 bears exist in Vietnam. So at least we have, you know, the opportunity to progress more with the government in ending it. In China, there is no law, and bear farming is actually legally allowed, if you like. But there are regulations to prevent bears from being in cages, for example, to say that they must only be in cages for a couple of minutes each day during bile extraction, and the rest of the time they have to be playing happily outdoors. It does not happen. It doesn't happen. The bear farmers, I have to say, are pathological liars, and they are deceiving the government, they are deceiving NGOs, they're deceiving everybody, because the majority of them are keeping them in these cages and cruelly milking them of bile through methods which are not allowed under Chinese regulations.
Is there enforcement of the regulations?
I have to say no. I have to say no. I wish there was. We are talking with the government more. I mean, you know, it doesn't behove us really to try to improve regulations, because then if you could understand, we would be buying into the fact that bear farming is an acceptable industry. And from a welfare, a conservation and a human health perspective, it's not a viable or a humane industry. It's just not. It's killing these bears from the wild, because they are bringing in these animals from the wild and reducing the populations, who are then ending their lives on these farms. It's certainly killing them from a welfare perspective because of these disgusting methods of bile extraction. And it's potentially, again, killing humans, because every gallbladder that we remove is contaminated with pus and urine and feces and cancer cells and a lot of other contaminants. So, you know, everything adds up that we can't possibly ever, ever, ever accept the notion of bear farming. It's hideous. It's wrong. It shouldn't be practiced in a civilized country, and it should end.
What is the average lifespan of a bear in the wild compared to a bear on the farm, on a bear farm?
Well, in the wild, they could live anything up to 30 years or more. On a bear farm, obviously, you know, their lifespan is severely compromised. You know, in our rescues, we've been getting two-year-olds coming in skeletal at death's door with cancers weighing 7 kilograms in weight in their bodies. 10% of their body weight or more have been taken up with these tumors in two-year-old bears. Having said that, we've had other bears like Oliver, 30 years in a cage. Franzi, who we lost last year, had been 25 years in a crush cage, declawed, detoothed, miserable condition. You know, these bears are so stoic, Laurel. They defy the laws of, you know, health and survival, you know, of almost any other species in this world. I think that's why NASA is, you know, researching them, because even of their hibernation traits, that they can shut off their systems for a six-month period, you know, and still survive. And I think that's got something to do with how they can somehow survive this physical and this mental degradation on the farms.
So tell me more about how you decide which bears to rescue or how that process works.
Basically, we tell the farmers how much space we have on our sanctuary, you know, when we've sort of built new dens or we've had sort of bears die. And, you know, we say, well, we've got room for 10, 20, 30 bears or more. And the government will then look at a list that they have and work with us on closing bear farms in any given province. So most exciting of all, with Shandong province, where we've just been, this was the last bear farm in that province. And one of our initiatives is to try to work through provinces in China to make them bear farm free. And Shandong was the 20th province that is now bear farm free.
Really? That's fantastic. Wow.
It's wonderful. Yeah. There's 32 provinces in China. So, you know, we are well over the two-thirds mark now. Just under. Can't do my maths. of the bear farming free provinces. Actually, it's 31 provinces, I think. It's a good feeling. And, you know, but, you know, having said that, obviously the provinces that are left, there's about 5 provinces where the main bear farms are. So we have a big, big problem and a big challenge on our hands. But at least if we can keep working through these provinces and having the authorities, you know, joining us in this initiative, I think it creates a very good motivator for the other provinces to join us. Who wants to be part of a practice that is condemned not only across the world, but by Chinese people too? There's a great groundswell of people here, again, that hate this industry. Hundreds of thousands of people now are joining us and want it to end.
In the remaining provinces, are the bear farms big? Are they small? Are they sort of industrial or more family type farms?
Yeah, anything, any and all that you've mentioned, Laurel. They will go from being a cottage industry with maybe one or two bears on a farm, anything up to thousands, literally 1 or 2,000 bears on one farm in what we call these super farms. Where men in white coats walk around looking very, very important, and, you know, where the conditions are more sterile, it has to be said, but where, again, how can you have an animal with a hole punctured, gouged into its abdomen and gallbladder and not be a perfect vector for bacterial infection? It's killing them, whether you have them in a tiny, disgusting little farm or a big, sterile super farm. It's the same.
And then as a policy, is the Chinese government, and also you mentioned the Vietnamese government, are they, I guess let's focus on China for a minute. Is there an expansion of bear farming, given that there's no regulations, or is that industry declining?
Well, it's an interesting question, Laurel. There's a decline in the number of bear farms. The official figure is about 68 farms, but actually we've done our own investigations. There are well over 70 farms, 80 farms maybe. But in fact, where the expansion is going on is in the number of bears on these farms, because at the moment there's no ban on breeding in China, which is pretty ridiculous, you know, given that our agreement with the Chinese government is to work towards ending this industry. So until, you know, we can see the government very actively banning breeding, you know, obviously the number of bears is increasing on these individual farms. And the one thing that's fueling this industry is the illegal export. You know, it's bile is getting out everywhere, and it's making us very, very frustrated. But again, having said all that, I think the one thing that is really very, very encouraging for us, if you like, is that we are now coming out with the evidence about bear farming potentially killing people. You've read all about the melamine scandals, the milk, the melamine in the milk, where the government have said, well, they didn't realize that milk contained melamine. We're telling them now bear bile contains these contaminants, which we believe is leading to the death of these animals from massive great liver cancers. And if it's killing the bears, what on earth is this contaminated bile doing to the health of people that consume it? And I think at last the government is taking us seriously. They've allowed us to present a report to the Food and Drug Administration, and we're waiting to hear feedback from them. And I'm hoping that, you know, if we can't end bear farming for the welfare of the bears, which I find very tragic, we can at least end bear farming because of the potential health impacts to humans.
How did you discover that the gallbladders have, or that the bile contains these types of contaminants? And what kinds of contaminants are there? You had mentioned different pus and bacteria and cancers, but could you talk a little bit more about that?
It wasn't too difficult, Laurel. I remember the very first gallbladder that we opened up. It was full of abscesses. It was leaking with bright yellow stinking pus in the middle of it. And it had rust flakes from where the metal catheter had been used and wasn't stainless steel and was rusting literally within the bear's body. And since then, you know, that was way back, I think, on one of the first bears we opened up in 1995. And since then, it's never, never, never changed. Every gallbladder we open, as I say, you can see these abscesses, you can see these tracks of infection, you can see old bits of catheter that have left behind, you can see inflammation on the gallbladder, you can see infection everywhere. And also, the other interesting thing is that even when we cannot see anything with the naked eye, when we send parts of the tissue of the gallbladder to pathologists in China and Vietnam, we had our latest quote from a hospital in Vietnam, and the doctor there said, to an organ that we thought was looking normal, he said, I don't know how this bear survived, because if it was a human, the human would be dead by now.
Really?
Yeah.
And what did the organ contain? That
Well, it was just so badly inflamed. I mean, it was, yeah, it just had pathological changes, which would have seen obviously, impacts to severe impacts to human health, and was obviously impacting the health of the bear as well.
And is that information, you had mentioned it's going to the Food and Drug Administration of China, I presume.
Yes, it is. But we've also obviously alerted the Vietnamese government as well to the horrors of the gallbladders there.
And so the Vietnamese government, you said the regulations there is now a ban on bear farming. When was that instituted?
Well, actually, way back in 1992, believe it or not, but I'm afraid that, and that was when there were about, 400 bears in the country, and we were appealing to the government. We began working there in 98 and appealed to them to close the farms because 400 bears was a manageable number. And I'm afraid they turned a blind eye, and today there are 4,000 bears because these farmers were allowed to keep them and not milk them of their bile. And, anyone with, the intelligence of a 2-year-old child will work out that why would a farmer want to keep a bear without milking its bile? So, yeah, that's where we are today. We're trying to engage the Vietnamese government together with other NGOs. We've got, ENV that works there.
That's Education for Nature Vietnam. And what other Vietnamese NGOs do you work with?
Free the Bears, Whisper, War, all the major NGOs in Vietnam that are working with us together in ending bear farming in the country there.
What about in China?
In China, we're the only NGO that's rescuing bears and working intensively with the government to end bear farming.
Tell me more about the rescues. So far, you have 276 currently at your facility. Is that
In
right? Is
China,
that
in
in China?
China, and 54 in Vietnam. Yep.
How many have you rescued since inception? Because presumably many of the bears have not made it or have died over time.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Laurel. 276 rescued and 180 alive today in China, and 54 rescued in Vietnam, and 50 alive today there. And we've got the capacity for about 320 in China. So we've still got we can still double up on the number of bears that we have here right now.
And in Vietnam, what is your capacity?
It'll ultimately be 200 bears, but obviously, we're reaching a quite a worrying stage in our progress because we always have an eye on the funding, and we are, really spending a huge amount of money now. Bears, I think even in my wildest dreams when we started this, I could never have imagined the capacity needed to actually rescue a bear. In China, we have over 152 people now living on, oh, sorry, working on site, from bear workers to cleaners to horticulture, growing a lot of the food and the browse for the bears, to our vet staff, our bear staff, our security, our administration, you name it. It's a well-oiled machine, but my goodness, it costs a huge amount of money. And we're spending well over, I think, $130,000 every month now on this program. So, we are in dire need of help in the USA, obviously. We have an office there that I hope people will go onto the website, call our US office, and please, please offer us help because I think, together we can end a hideous practice that should never have begun.
And what happens when you rescue a bear? You had mentioned this rescue that just took place with the 10 bears, including Oliver, where it was a 4-day ride in a truck, presumably. And then what happens? You go out there. Can you describe the process of what you do?
Sure. Well, generally, we will. This was unique because we actually transferred the bears into our recovery cages on the site of the bear farm, and then we brought them back, and we were able to get them straight away into quarantine, into the hospital, where we started on their surgery to remove the gallbladders. Every bear needs its gallbladder removed, and needs a lot of other tidying up. 90%, probably 99% of the bears need their teeth removed. Again, the canines, if they haven't been cut back by the farmer, the bears will have shattered their own teeth from repetitive bar biting, from literally being cage crazy on these farms. So they will need gallbladders removed, major dental repair. They will need perhaps their eyes being looked at. We've had ophthalmologists come out from the UK, from the Animal Health Trust, to deal with some of our blind bears as a result of the poor nutrition on the farms and the lack of vitamin E from as a result of that. So it's just, as I said before, it's a catalogue of injuries that need to be addressed. But if the bears come to us, they will be coming in their original crush cages, and we will line them up over the course of a few days to monitor their behaviour and their health. You can't just crack open the cage and get those bears out into a den. You know, I wish we could, but for an animal that's suffered for decades, we need to look at, you know, the pathology, the health and mental impacts. So where a bear maybe will have a huge great hernia, we may leave that bear actually almost to the last in exchange for a bear that's not eating. What we've learned over the years, if a bear's not eating, unlike a cat or a dog, it is incredibly serious, and it's usually a bear that's at death's door. If a cat or a dog, you know, you try to rehydrate, you know, you gradually feed water and food, and you may get the animals coming back. If the bear's not eating, we're finding a bear that's crashing. So we would have those bears in theatre first. And then we're just prioritising them for this surgery. Once the surgery has happened, we then start putting them into dens singly, and then slowly, slowly introducing them to other bears, one by one by one, and then ultimately getting them out into groups, into social groups, into the enclosures. So this whole process can take anything up to a year, even 18 months.
I was just going to say it's like a very long process.
It is, and it can't be rushed. Again, these are animals, remember, that are weighing, you know, anything up to 200 kilograms in weight, and physically very capable of hurting each other, and not being very pleasant if the interaction isn't successful. So it has to be a very slow and a very methodical process, and we've learned a lot over these years. Luckily, we've had no deaths as a result of management issues or aggression. But of course, we have our fair share of fights. they'll give each other a blow every now and then, and we have the occasional stitching that we have to do. Again, it's very, very few and far between. I think less than 10 in the space of over 10 years. So, I think we know our bears and we do our job well. But it's not something you take for granted. It's a serious, serious business.
And then do the bears end up living outdoors, or do they live in dens, or...?
Yep, both, Laurel. They have dens to sleep in at night. They have these amazing hanging basket beds that they absolutely adore. And then they can trundle out. They have absolutely the freedom in the mornings to go out, spend the whole day in the sanctuary, and then come back at night. We like to keep them safe in their dens at night. But having said that, we're also looking, researching some areas where we could keep them out 24/7. So.
And can these bears ever be released back into the wild?
Well, we used to say no, you know, because they haven't learned the skills for a mum to survive. And, you know, because they don't have their defences to survive in the wild. A lot of them have been declawed and detoothed, for example, and don't have any teeth or claws. But, you know, there's more and more research out there that you know, is popping up and making us explore a little bit more. And perhaps in Vietnam, we just may look at exploring in the future some wild areas that could be semi-contained very cheaply, hopefully very easily, and we just go from there. So, you know, I guess the old answer of no, we can't put them in the wild, has been changed for, you know, let's explore this and just see what we can do.
I understand you've recently had some Buddhist monks traveling over 30 hours to pay respects to your new bears. Can you tell me how that came about, and how, I guess what this means is it's gaining attention and support from a lot of different quarters?
It's just lovely, Laura. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of people coming here every year now. And these Buddhist monks, it was such a moving ceremony. They walked into our quarantine area down the middle of these two lines of caged bears and sprinkled holy water onto these animals and sang Buddhist chants. And at the end of it, you know, told us that the bears belonged to Buddha and were Buddhists now. And it was a really moving ceremony. And it's to say they'd come over 2,000 kilometers on a 30-hour train journey. And we actually, this afternoon, we have another Buddhist coming along to give another blessing to our bears. We have school children coming. We have business groups coming. We have celebrities coming, government officials, in a program that is really mobilizing Chinese people now and Vietnamese people very, very seriously in ending bear farming. Just a few weeks ago, we were in the streets of Chengdu, believe it or not, where we had 30 Chinese medicine shops that had joined us pledging never to sell bear bile again. And we were at three of those shops where they allowed us to burn all of their products containing bear bile in the streets of Chengdu. You know, this is communist China, where demonstrations, as I'm sure your listening public will realize, is something that is frowned upon. We had the police turning up, and it within a few minutes, when I went over to talk with them, together with their education guy, Rainbow, they just said, "We know what you do," and gave us the thumbs up and drove away. And it was unbelievable. I mean, I've been living out here for nearly 25 years in Hong Kong and China. And it's only in the last 5 years, I can honestly say, where things have snowballed in as much as, you know, recognition of the environment, of animal welfare, and people again being mobilized to wanting to do something to help. So it's a great time to be here.
So tell me more about some of these things, because that what you just described is pretty incredible. And how has the traditional medicine community reacted? Has it all reacted like these 30 medicine shops in Chengdu?
Yeah, again, very, very positively. We held a conference together with the American College of Traditional Chinese Medicine, with lovely Li Xinhuang heading up that organization. And she had organized a big conference in Beijing towards the end of last year, which we were very proud to help fund and contribute in terms of presentations with Chinese medicine doctors. About 300 stakeholders in that audience, all from the disciplines of traditional Chinese medicine, who, again, were pledging not to use any animal parts, endangered animal parts, traditional medicine. And it was a great moment, because Li Xinhuang has a very famous quote where she challenges, you know, anyone out there who are farming bears. And she says, "Don't use traditional medicine as your excuse to farm bears, because we don't need them."
This idea is really taking hold. Is it starting to become a majority opinion or not really?
Hi, majority opinion in China. Well, maybe not quite. but snowballing, as I said, I can't use any other word. It's fantastic. And any eminent Chinese doctor is not going to stand up and say bear bile cannot be replaced, because we know it can. And for any of your listeners that are thinking this is some sort of quack medicine, as I did in the early 90s, you know, prepare yourselves, because bear bile really, really works. We've worked with the Minnesota University in the past, who have identified an essential acid called ursodeoxycholic acid, which apparently does amazing things. And one of the things can apparently rejuvenate cells in your brain that will otherwise die. So we're talking about a potential cure for Huntington's, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, etc., etc. It's already synthesized out there using the byproducts of slaughterhouses, where you know, from chicken bile, for example. Which, that's another subject, and I'll talk about that another time. But anyway, it is already synthesized, and it means that no human is going to die for the lack of bear bile.
Is the synthesized version as effective as the natural version?
Apparently it is, and to all intents and purposes, there are statements out there that say it's better, and I would concur with that, because in its current form, because as I said to you before, every single sample of bear bile we remove is contaminated. So, you know, in traditional Chinese medicine terms, of course, I can't say that synthesized bile is better. You know, you cannot You cannot criticize one discipline of medicine. But what I'm saying is that farmed bear bile, again, is so full of pus and urine and feces and all other disgusting things that how can it be any good, you know, to the people that are consuming it?
So have there been statements also by the Chinese government pledging not to use endangered animal parts in traditional medicine or encouraging doctors not to use?
Yes, they have. I mean, they do that. They are very, very good at that. They will always try to promote the alternatives. Again, with the provincial signing that we've had here in China, we signed a formal agreement with 19 provinces now, and the 20th was Shanghai, that by default doesn't have any bear farms anyway. But all these provincial authorities, we had a great meeting with them, again, towards the end of last year, and it was one of the most exciting moments of my life, you know, because all of these government officials were saying, you know, why would we have bear farming? Why do we need it when so many herbal and synthetic alternatives exist to take the place of bear bile?
On the international demand side, is a lot of bear bile from farms exported?
Illegally, yes. Absolutely, it is. You know, we've gone into Chinese medicine shops in Vietnam and seen packaged products originating from Chinese bear farms with the name, the address, the telephone number, etc. You know, and again, farther afield, there's a lot of stings that certainly go on in the United States where you can find bear bile originating from Chinese bear farms. Absolutely no question.
And then what can people do to help if they want to get involved?
Thank you so much, Laurel. Please, please help us. Go onto the website. There are an amazing number of initiatives. You can call our US
and the,
office.
And the website is animalsasia.org.
That's it. That's it. Okay. Thank you. And then our telephone number is 1-888-420-BEAR. And that, again, you'll have Alice or Morgan picking up the phone to speak with our amazing US girls there, who will give you chapter and verse the many ways that you can help. You can, you know, join our support groups there. You can hold functions for us. You can help them in volunteer work. Please, obviously, we do need funds. We're desperate for funds to keep these bears alive and to keep rescuing more so that we can keep gathering evidence to end this hideous practice.
And can people adopt bears as well? And
absolutely, you can. Yes, you can. You can sponsor bears. You can adopt bears. You can befriend bears. You can buy them honey. You can buy them raisins. You can buy them hanging basket beds, even swimming pools. Again, all that information is on the website or just by phoning Alice and Morgan, and they'll give you all the information that you need. We do fantastic presents at Christmas and Valentine's Day and Mother's Day and Father's Day, etc. You know, who wouldn't want a bear in their lives? You know, it's a big bear hug for the family. There's nothing than being hugged by a bear.
And then I wanted to end by talking about some of the bears that you've known and some of sort of other bears that you've rescued who have touched your heart. And I mean, one I was thinking of was Jasper, who was one of your early bears. I just wanted to hear a little about some of the bears.
Yeah. Thank you, Laurel. I mean, they just, my, you know, my long-standing statement is, as much as we're rescuing the bears, they rescue us as well. And, you know, if we have a funeral and we say goodbye to an animal that we have so much loved and lost and respected, you know, you walk back from the funeral and you walk past Jasper's enclosure, and very often he's just sitting there right by the fence line looking out with those calm, unblinking eyes of his, as if he understands and says, hey, it's okay. Or he's tumbling around with his best friends Banjo and Ozzy, splashing around in the swimming pool. And this is a bear that was 15 years in a crushed cage, flattened to the bars of the cage with a 7-inch catheter protruding from his abdomen, all that time being so utterly betrayed by the species that adores him now. I mean, I don't know how he's got that capacity to forgive. Again, I always say that you'd have to be someone like Mandela to be able to forgive that sort of imprisonment. And, you know, bears like Jasper, There's other bears, like there's Quantock, that I watched for a long time yesterday. He came in having rubbed the whole of his face away on the bars of a cage for probably 10, 20 years. He's got no fur on his face. He's got the end of his nose that has been rubbed away from this frantic bar rubbing as a result, not just of the physical problems, but the mental problems that he endured on a bear farm. And today, he loves playing with his best friends out in the enclosure. And he just, I think these bears just teach us to be better people. They teach us to forgive. They teach us to overcome our problems and our difficulties. And, you know, whatever problem that I certainly have in this world, I always think, my God, as I feel sad or upset or I feel I'm suffering, it's nothing compared to 7,000 bears that are in their cages right now in China and 4,000 in Vietnam. And every time we stretch at night in something we take for granted in our sleep, this is something that not any animal on a bear farm can do, let alone having free access to food and water, let alone having friends to play with, let alone being able to feel the sun on your back or the wind in your fur.
Well, I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with me.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Laurel, and thank you for, you know, the story of the bears in your amazing book. I urge everybody to please go out and buy it. You know, it is. It's a wonderful book, you know, able to obviously combine the reality of what is going out there, you know, in terms of bears in the wild and on the farms as well, and all other animals. So thank you, Laurel, from the animal world for creating a book which will help them.
Oh, my pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation about bear farming and the rescue of moon bears in China and Vietnam with Jill Robinson, founder of Animals Asia Foundation. Now, let me play you today's creature call once again and see if you've guessed it correctly. This week's creature call is the sound of an ungulate that is one of the largest mammals in North America and Eastern Asia. Bulls grow to about 700 pounds and average about 5 feet tall at the shoulder and 8 feet from nose to tail. You often find them in the western United States of California, Oregon, and Washington, and the western province of British Columbia. During rutting season, the males spar and make loud screams, called bugling, that can be heard for miles and help them dominate other males and attract females. It works because females are attracted to the males that bugle more often and have the loudest call. Do you know what it is? It's an elk. Here's the sound of an elk bugling. For next week's creature call, I'll play the sound of a common insect that can be found here in Vermont and across the United States. Here's your preview. Be sure to tune in next week when I'll replay this strange sound from the wild world and reveal the animal that made it.
Archived episodes of The Wildlife are available on iTunes, at my website, laurelnemi.com, and at laurelnemi.podbean.com. You can stream The Wildlife live at theradiator.org every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, if you have comments about this show, or ideas for future ones, you can email me at laurel@laurelnemi.com.
The Wildlife is generously underwritten by the Lake Champlain Land Trust, a nonprofit organization permanently conserving the lands, lakeshore, critical wildlife habitats, and natural areas of Lake Champlain. More information is available online at lclt.org. This has been The Wildlife. I'm your host, Laurel Nemi, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, in Burlington, Vermont.